Perfect.
Okay, chapter four, we agnostics. I highlighted the first paragraph. The first paragraph, because there's two questions to qualify a newcomer to AA. And it says in this, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. So we went through more about alcoholism. We understood about the allergy and the malady or the mental obsession that sits with alcoholism. It says, we hope we have made it clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, which is on page 20 and 21, remember? On page 20, it spoke about a moderate drinker and a hard drinker. Given sufficient reason, they can stop. And then page 21 went on to about the real alcoholic. And that's the guy that's lost, or the woman that's lost the power of choice in drink. Page 24 tells us that we've lost the power of choice. So someone can man the door, it'd be great. We've lost the power of choice. So it's going to give us two questions. And these two questions are what I always say to people, we're going to qualify the newcomer. And it does piss a lot of people off because they don't feel that we need to qualify them. But the book says, go to the nearest bar room, try some controlled drinking, and you're going to get an understanding of the condition you've got after we've explained what the problem is. It then says, we made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic and underlined this and highlighted these. He says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, is the first question. Can you quit forever? Can you quit for a year or more? It's question one to the newcomer. Nine times out of 10, if the real alcoholic can't stop drinking, they're going to answer, I can't stop for a year or more. That's the first question. It says, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, which is the allergy, you're probably alcoholic. But they're the two questions that I ask every newcomer, every sponsee. Can you stop for a year or more? No. And when started, can you control or stop? No. Welcome to AA, because now you're the person with the problem that we have a solution for. It's as if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, which only, and underline this, a spiritual experience can conquer. It doesn't say cure. It says we're going to beat it. We're going to conquer alcoholism, right? The mind and body, which means when we get through the program, and I always say I'm recovered, we're going to find the power we lacked. And this is what this chapter is about. To one that feels he is atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, underline disaster, because I'm going to drink. If I cannot find the power, if I'm not willing to go to any lengths to find a solution, I will drink again. Which is why I came to bloody AA, but I didn't really want to come to AA. But I had no solution on my own power to stop drinking. He says, especially if he's the alcoholic and otherwise of the hopeless variety, the powerless, hopeless, godless, right? And here's the step one promise. It says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death. If I don't take the program, I'm going to drink. And for us to drink is to die. So the step one promise will be, if you don't take this program, you're going to die. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always two easy alternatives to face because there's only one solution, only one answer. On our own, we can't do it. But it is so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were exactly of that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact. And underline this sentence, we must find a spiritual way of life or else we drink, right? We must find a spiritual way of life. Perhaps that is going to be this way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us still, we're agnostics, atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. Don't be worried about it. Because to drink is to die, right? So you're either going to be willing to believe in a power. And that's all we're going to come to step two. Is there any willingness to believe, right? It's if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us could have recovered long ago. And Bill Wilson said, self-knowledge would fix it. I'm just not going to drink. I'm going to be all right. And then he took that first drink. He said the frightful day came and he picked another drink up because he had no defense against it. But we found that such code and philosophies did not save us. No matter how much we tried, we could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could wish all these things in our might, but the needed power wasn't there. I underlined the next sentence and I highlighted it. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed us utterly. I can't stop on my own. It's going to bang on about this for the whole chapter. And I highlighted the next paragraph. It says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. Because of my own power, I can't stop. He says, as marshaled by the will, they were not sufficient. They failed us. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power to which we could live by. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power with a question mark? And we all know that when we go through step 4 and 5, we start to have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, and the power becomes unblocked because it's blocked with all that crap and the resentments and the pomp and the worship and the fear and the sex conduct. And it's blocked by us. The power is inside of us. Well, this is exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves, and underline this, that will solve your problem. Because lack of power is our dilemma. When we find the power, it's going to solve the problem. Quite simple. And if you're going to be doomed to an alcoholic death, what choice are you going to make? What decision will you make when we get to step 3? Because Bill Wilson would get you to step 3, and if you didn't want to believe in God and you didn't want to make a decision, he'd kick you out, take the book, and get somebody else. Because people are not willing to go to any length, right? He says, that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. Moral in the big book means truthful. Spiritual and truthful. And it means, of course, we're going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss, and underline this, is alcoholic problems. His mind and body, the consequences, right? When I'm interviewing you, and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we start speaking of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or completely ignored. And underline these next 5 words. We know how he feels. I didn't come to AA to find God. When I started reading the steps, and I wanted to talk, spoke about God, this and God, that, and I thought, you know what? It's a cult. I don't want to, it's not what I'm here for. I'm here to learn how to stop drinking and to enjoy it and to drink like a gentleman. Until it's explained as we went through the first bit in the preceding chapters, we've learned. I can't stop. The only solution, Keith, is a power greater than you. We have to find a power which you could live by. Only solution. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which somebody had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined that we had, underlined these last 5 words again, abandoned the God idea entirely. I wasn't having none of that God stuff growing up as a young man, which was centuries ago, right? I wasn't having none of that God stuff. That weren't what it was about for me. Until I come to AA, crushed, beat, humiliated. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power greater than ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, an inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. And Frank stopped me at this point. He said, Keith, who do you think starts wars? God don't start the wars. They're started by humans, by willpower, by control freaks. God is love and peace, right? We looked at askings and asked in many individuals who claim to be godly, how could a supreme being have anything to do with it at all? The question mark. And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was a fleeting and soon lost. Because I never believed. I actually thought I was lucky. That's what I thought. Well, oh my God, I'm so lucky. But I realized when I look back in my life, God stepped in all of my life, even as bad as I was. Even as sick as I was, God has always been there. I was too full of self to see. I was always guided. Yes, we have agnostic temperament, have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. Underline this next four lines. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in the power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though we thought it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God, underline that. The minute we start praying, and I tell people, start praying straight away. Within a week, there'll be a little internal shift. Life will get a little bit easier. You're going to feel a little bit different. For us, the spiritual experience or spiritual awakening is a long-term, drawn out through the program of recovery. Bill had a white-like experience. He called it a spiritual experience because he had a flash and it was a whole change. But some of us don't have that. We have the educational variety. I'm going to read that again. We found as soon as we were able to lay aside any prejudice, as soon as we were willing, right, and express even a willingness to believe in a great power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. And I say to my sponsors, do you believe that I believe? And if the answer is yes, all you've got to be is be willing to try it. Willing to believe. We was willing to go to any length to get a drink. We was willing to drink anything that was put in our path. So if it got us out of our heads quick enough, we would drink it. So why wouldn't we be willing to believe there's a solution, believe there's a power? Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider any other conception of God, and underline these next two lines, our own conception, our own idea, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. Step two is about a willingness to believe. Start of a relationship with you and a power. Because all through your whole program, you're going to get a relationship with yourself, with God, and with another person being a sponsor. It's all about building bridges. It's all about a relationship. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And let me tell you, after 23 years, I still don't know what it is. But I don't care. I just know there's a God in my life. I know there's a power that's kept me sober. Probably Valerie will say the same. A long time has kept us sober. And I don't know what it is. I just pray to the power. I call it God. I never used to. I used to call it the higher power. But call it God now because it suits me. I'm comfortable with that. And to effect a contact with him, which is prayer. As soon as we admitted the possibility of an existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underline the totality of things, and underline these next two sentences, or lines, sorry, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. And next that I wrote, action. So we start to pray, and we start to feel a little different, and we need to put the action in through 4 through 9 to get the full result, the full benefits. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those, underline this, who seek him. We seek through prayer and meditation. To us, the last three word lines are highlighted again. The realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive. Don't you think you're that bad, God won't bring you in. Let me tell you, God won't have anybody. It doesn't matter how bad you think you are. I'm a real badass bitch and I can't have God. And it'll take all of us. And we have that in the steps of prayer. It'll have all of us good and bad, right? The realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. Underline it. Earnestly means honestly. If you honestly seek. It's open, we believe, to all men and women. It's open, right? Top of 47. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception. It can be the spirit of the universe. It could be a group of trunks. It could be, you know, it can't be me parrot or me dog, right? Or it can't be my sponsor. It has to be something else, something power, something great. This applies too to other spiritual expressions to which you will find in this book. Do not let any prejudice inside of you, any doubt you may have against spiritual terms to deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. Just need to start praying. Start reaching out. Start seeking the power. To our effect, our first conscious relation with a God as we understood him afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wish to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it is. Doesn't matter what you think it is. I got sober and I used the book because the book at that point was 75 years or 60 years away. Was I used the book because the book hadn't changed and the words meant exactly the same. And every time I read it, it sounded different. It sobered up millions and thousands and millions of people that have read the book, one of the biggest selling books of all time years ago. So why wouldn't I pick that as a power rating myself? Because it was written by the first 100 people or up to that contributed to it. I highlighted the next whole paragraph. Comes to step two question, right? So we needed to ask ourselves one short question. We don't need a massive drawn out affair about step two. It's really quite simple. It says, do I now believe or am I willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? A step two question with a question mark. It's only about being willing to believe. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. He has been repeatedly proven among us, underline that, proven among us, that upon this simple cornerstone of a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. Because step one was the foundation. Step two is the cornerstone. We're going to build up and put a picture in the group later. The spiritual structure that's going to run us to freedom or take us to freedom. That was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of our spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. I didn't believe in God, let me tell you. But I'll drive past the churches and I see all the church folk coming out all happy and joyous. It's not like us in the nightclub coming out fighting and arguing, right? They were spiritually connected. We wasn't, right? You never see them coming out of the church and having a fight, do you? When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it will work if only I could believe as he believes. And I used to sit in the meetings and look at people around and go, my God, he's so connected. What is he doing differently to me? But we have to remember, this is the start of the journey. It's only a matter of being willing to believe. Our first conscious contact, our first prayer. And then we're going to build upon the relationship. And the people I sat in AA and looked in AA at 10, 20, 30 years, of course they found God. Of course they found the power. But I cannot accept as surely true as many articles on faith which are supplying to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. If you want to pick a reading out of the book, sorry to jump off here, on the fourth edition, go page 509, right? And lead from 509 at my first meeting to the end of the chapter. It's two or three pages. And it sort of relates to that paragraph just read out, just off the top of my head. So not now, but when we finish, 509 at my first meeting to the end of the chapter. And then you're going to realize what it means to be the guys that have got 30 years that are all serene and full of God and full of love to the newcomer, right? Besides a seemingly inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped, underline these next four words, by obstinacy, sensitiveness, unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even a casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. Didn't believe it. Underline this next sentence. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. Has to go. You can't think like that. You've got to give it a shot, right? Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Here's your step one promise. Faced with alcoholic destruction, you're going to die. We soon became open-minded on spiritual matters, which was step two. As we tried to be on other questions. In this respect, and I highlighted these next two lines, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Next to that, I wrote bottom. The minute I reach out, the minute I ask, that's when I'm at bottom. Alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hoped that no one else will be prejudiced for as long as we were. And in the early days of AA, when they put together, they didn't want to be. They didn't want to be like that. They pushed aside the God idea. And look at Bill. He relapsed time and time, 7 years. He fought to get sober. Because he wouldn't believe in God. He wouldn't take the program. The reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater than himself. We think there are good reasons. Let's have a look at some of them. Here's some examples why we should have a bit of faith, belief in faith. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. That means I want it to be proven. I want to see there's a faith because I can't touch it. And I don't know what it's about. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts all theories of all kinds, provided they are firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes without a murmur of doubt. Why is this readily acceptance? Because we all come home and we flick the kettle on and we flick the light on and flick the TV on, we put our Zoom on, and we expect it to be there. So we have a faith already. So if you think you haven't got a faith, you haven't got a God, why are you sitting on Zoom looking at me on the other side of the world? Because we've all got a bit of faith. We've all got a little bit of belief. Simply because it's impossible to explain what we can't see, feel, direct, and use, which is true. Without reasonable assumption as a starting point. Everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there is good evidence, but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? Question mark, of course. It is being constantly revealed as mankind studies that material world, that outwardly appearances are not inward reality at all to illustrate. It means what you can't touch, you can't see, right? The prosaic steel girder. You know what that is? That's some electricity pylons. You know, you see them, all the cables going across the countries? That's the prosaic steel girder. That's what that is. There's a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speed. They're the cables that take electricity across the countries. We only see what they are. We can't see what's inside it. But they're transporting millions of tons of electricity to everybody's house. And we can't see it, but we believe and we know that's what they do, even though we can't see it. Incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world, which means we've got them in every country in the world. And then big electricity pilots. Science tells us so. So we have no reason to doubt. Now, if I went up and touched it, I'd get my arm shot off and probably die. But I believe it because I flick my light switch on, I flick my computer on, and I see all you beautiful people around the world. And I know it's true, right? We have no reason to doubt it. When, however, the perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there's an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence. Right there, our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it ain't true. But there's a God over all this, Keith, now, can't we? Because my uncle built them pylons. He put them in and he put the cable. Yeah, we don't believe it, right? We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments, thinking that we believe this universe needs no God to explain. Were our contentions true, it would follow that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, rather vain of us, wasn't it? Let me tell you, for some of you people on here, us older people, when we go back to the 60s and the 70s, life wasn't like this. We never had laptops and phones and computers. We had none of that. It was all different. But where life has advanced, God hasn't changed. God has always been exactly the same. People go to the same churches. They do the same things. They all pray. They all have the power. Our lives have changed from when I'm a real old kid now. But you go back 40 years, it wasn't like this. You know, cars, everything was simple. Nowadays, it's a lot more difficult where things have advanced. But when we get that God idea, we still go, oh, is that God, you know, when I was drinking, someone said, Keith, listen, God's going to solve that. Yeah, good one. I'll just stop. I couldn't, right? I like this next sentence. We have traveled this dubious path that doubted God. Beg of you to lay aside any prejudice. We're telling you, please be open-minded. Please be willing to believe. Even against organized religion, we have learned whatever human frailties of various faith may be, Those faiths have given purpose and directions to millions, which we have. We see them coming out of churches. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is about. I highlighted that. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practicing when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colours and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness and usefulness to which we have sought ourselves. And we see that again. I'm going to with reference to the people out of church. They look stable, they look smart, they're tidy, they turn up on time, they go to church and they come out and they look happy and merry. And I'm the town drunk that can't get sober, running a well down, running people down, blaming the wife and the children and the jobs. And my life's a mess. They've got stability. The only difference is they've got a power and I hadn't. Top of 50. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people. And sometimes they'll use their shortcomings as a wholesale condemnation. We run them down. Look at them there. The old God squad. We talked of tolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality of the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way that each teller approaches and conceives the power to which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with that particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these matters are about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. There are questions for each individual to settle for himself. And I highlighted from here this last little bit of this last paragraph. On one proposition, however, these men and women were strikingly agreed. And this is a really powerful part of this book. Every one of them underlined it, not some of them. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. It restored us to sanity. It solved the drink problem. We've become recovered. Every single one of them has gained access. So when you want to start with belief and we want to argue, we look at that sentence, every single one. Next to that, I wrote the title page because on the title page it says this. The story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. So when it says, let's look at the record on that page you're reading, let's look at the record. There's the record. How many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, right? Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed, and I highlighted all this bottom paragraph. They flatly declared that since they come to believe in a power of themselves, to take a certain attitude of open-mindedness, and to do some certain simple things, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. They recovered. The first 100 recovered. In the face of collapse and despair, which was step one, promise again, right? In the face of total failure of their human resources, they found a new power, peace, and happiness, and a sense of direction flowed into them. How powerful is that? When you want a solution and you want to read this, when we look at the face of despair and total failure of my life while drinking, then I find the power. Then I get that new power, peace and happiness, and a sense of direction flowed into them. This happened as soon as they wholeheartedly, underlined it, wholeheartedly, not part, met a few simple requirements. Once a confused, baffled, by the seeming futility of existence, they showed underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. And I highlight these next five lines. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important factor of their lives today, They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Powerful. When everybody is singing from the same song sheet, when everybody's telling the same story, why am I going to doubt it? Let's look at the record. He said it. We go to the title page. Many thousands have recovered. And I'm the one going, there's no God. I'm not having none of that God. I don't believe in that God. I'm not having no God. And all of you on this program on here today go, but there is a God and I found it. And I'm happy and I'm joyous and I'm free and I've got a sense of direction and I'm at ease. I'm the one that's not, so don't believe, right? This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of the men of those days was equal to the best today. They're telling us they was no different 200 years ago. They had the same intellect, the same intelligence. We believe we're better because things have moved on, technology's moved on. But let me tell you this. Yet in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by, and underline this, superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. What that means is, if you thought outside of the box, you were shackled and stoned. If you thought different to the rest of the people, they would tie you up, put you in the shackles, they would stone you to death. Because people weren't allowed to think open-minded and have their own beliefs. We all had to think the same way and do the same thing. That's why things were fettered back in them days. We were fettered by superstition, that going, he's a witch, she's a witch. Tradition, all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought around Earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death by the astronomical heresies. Two lines are highlighted again. We asked ourselves this. Are some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit? Of course we are. We still don't want to believe it. As were the ancients about the realm of the material. Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print the account of the Wright brothers. First successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Hadn't all the efforts of flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds proved that man could never fly? And that's what Professor Langley said. No one can fly. He stood by that. These Wright brothers were two bicycle mechanics, right? They made a plane, and the plane flew, and it crashed. And they decided to make another one, and they proved, as we're going to read on the next page, they made it work. And they got the newspapers around to go, look, it does work. And a top professor in the world at the time said it can't happen. But these two humble bike mechanics just proved outside of the box because they weren't fettered by superstition, tradition, and old ideas. They thought it could happen and they proved it, right? Had not people said that God reserved this privilege to the birds only? Only 30 years later, the conquest of air was almost an old story. And airplane travel was but in full swing. But most fields of our generation have witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a supplement of describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, I bet they're going to do that. Maybe not so long either. Is not our age characterized by the case with which we discard old ideas for new? Underlined it. Because that is the program. We go out of our old self, in with our new self. By the complete readiness to which we throw away the theory or the gadget which does not work for something new that does. We have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply, and I underline this, to our human problems. This is not alcoholism. Our human problems, right? Next out, I wrote self, because this is going to come up later. Our human problems with the same readiness to change our point of view. And I highlighted his next three lines. He says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression, and we couldn't make a living. People tarnish that and they believe that's alcoholism, but it's not. Because it's our human problems. We all get them, whether you're alcoholic or not. We had a feeling of uselessness, and we were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was this not the basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see the newsreel of lunar flight? Of course it was. Everybody has human problems, not just the alcoholic. Highlight the next four lines. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon a spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And there's proof again. The second page in a row has told us our ideas don't work. The Wright brothers almost childish faith that they could build a machine which could fly it was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to that idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems, underlined it. Because if you're atheist and agnostic and you don't believe in God, you believe you can stop drinking, you can solve the problem. When others showed us that God sufficiently worked for them, we began to feel those who insisted the Wright brothers could never fly. Logic is a great stuff. We like it. We still like it. Is it not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw our own conclusions? That is one man's magnificent attributes. We're agnostically inclined that would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we're at pains to tell you why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it's more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. We say that our, and underline this, our former thinking was soft and mushy. That was me before I got sober. My former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw our hands up in doubt and said, we don't know. Underline this, when we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What's our choice to be? Underlined it. Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with a question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge to reason towards a desire sure of faith. The outlines of the promise of new land have brought luster to our tired eyes, a fresh courage to flag in spirits. This means when I sit in a meeting and I'm new, and I see all you guys there, you all pray, you're looking good, you're sounding good, you're smelling good, and I'm the one with doubt and prejudice and no God. I have to doubt my thinking because I can see it in other people working. Friendly hands are stretched out and welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far. But somehow we could not quite step ashore. Perhaps we've been leaning too heavily on the reason that last mile, we did not like to lose our support. That was natural, but let us think a little more. And I highlight these next two lines. Without knowing it, have we not been brought to where we had stood by some certain kind of faith? And I say that every meeting. Has God not brought all of us together without us even wanting to be together, right? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? But was that a sort of faith? Yes, it had been faithful, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We found too that we'd been worshippers. What a state of goose, of mental goose flesh used to bring on. That's goosebumps, by the way. Have we not variously worshipped people, sentiments, things, money, and ourselves? Women, men, cars, sex, right? And then a better motive. Have we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much do these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing. We saw at last. That means we're open-minded now. Were not these things the tissue out where our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say that we had no capacity of faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we've been living by faith and little else. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life, of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you could prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling onto a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seem more intelligent than that, at least so the chemist said. Hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason as the most of us used to use it. Entirely dependable. Though it emanate from our best minds, what about people that prove that man could never fly? This is a summary, right? Yet we've been seeing another kind of flight, the spiritual liberation from this world. People arose above their problems. They said, God made this possible. That's us, by the way. And we only smiled. And I underlined this now. Well, to be honest, I highlight the whole page down to the paragraph, right? The consciousness down to you. We had seen spiritually, but we like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. This is where God lies. It may be obscured by calamity, pomp, or worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and a miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are factors as old as man himself, because we see it in other people. And I underline these three words. We finally saw. Now I've gone through the chapter. I can now see it makes sense to believe than not to believe. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was part of our maker, just as much as the feeling we had for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, steps 4 through 9, but he was there. He was much as a fact as we were, and I underline this, we found the great reality, which is God, deep down within us. In that last analysis, it's only there that he may be found, and it was so with us. When we unblock that crap inside of us, that's where God lies, that voice that says, don't do it. And we do it, and he goes, wrong. We go, oh, shit, I knew I shouldn't have done it. That's the voice of reason, right? We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. And I highlight this last sentence and I underlined it. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Our friend was a minister's son. This is Fitzmoyer. He attended church school where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged down by trouble, frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered him and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism. Impending mental, physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night when he confined in a hospital, he's approached by an alcoholic, who's Bill W., who'd known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gauze rose as he bitterly cried out, if there's a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. But later alone in his room, he asked himself this question. Is it possible that all the religious people I've known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he'd lived in a hell. And then like a thunderbolt, a great thought came and it crowded out. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees and in a few seconds he was overwhelmed by the conviction of the presence of God. It poured over and over through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide of flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He stepped from bridge to shore for the first time. He lived in the conscious companionship of his creator. Thus, our friend's cornerstone was fixed in place. No later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away. That very night, years ago, it appeared, save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. And at such a great time, the great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly he could not drink even if he wanted to. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew. Even so, God has restored all of us to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some must grow into it more slowly. But he has come to all as honestly saw him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And that's that.